agreed to do this interview on the condition that you first could read a statement of your beliefs. So I'd like to give you the opportunity to do that first.
All right. It's my belief in teaching that for any sane white man today, there is no other issue than these 14 words. We must secure the existence of our people in a future for white children. These 14 words are the sacred battle cry of the main white world.
Why are those words so important to you?
If there is not a total white revolution, very, very soon, then the beauty of the white Aryan woman will cease to exist on this continent and the acts of this world forever.
Why do you say that?
The current white population of the world is approximately 8 to 10%. Approximately 2 to 3% of the world's population is young white female, that is female of childbearing age or younger. Your media and the religious systems we live under promote and sanction the mixing of these last white men with colored races constantly. And your government denies us white nations, white schools, white organizations, white neighborhoods, and everything necessary for survival as a race.
Stop, the mics pick up every little sound. It's amazing. It's like air conditioning units that you wouldn't even hear suddenly become so loud. And
all right.
So anyway, but it's a problem resolved, though. It's your government too.
Mm-hmm. You could call me a lot of things, but don't call me any relation to the American government. Your government, if you consider it yours, has traveled this world for 2 centuries, from Dixie to Cuba to Mexico to Grenada, repeatedly to Panama, to a dozen Latin American countries, to Italy, to Germany twice, to Korea, to Vietnam, to Iraq, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, to Waco, Texas, to Whidbey Island, to Ruby Ridge, and hundreds of lesser-known wars, occupations, and assassinations in pursuit of your novus ordo seclorum. Novus ordo seclorum.
Which means?
Well, I think technically the New Order of the Ages. George Bush calls it the New World Order. It appears on the Great Seal of the United States, which has been around for over 200 years. This traveling murder circus has killed literally tens of millions of people. Very real, destroying the integrity of every race, nation, and culture on the globe in pursuit of this new world order. A few men of honor somewhere are going to have to find the courage to put an end to this evil.
And what does that mean, David? A few men of honor are going to have to find the courage. What are they supposed to do?
This evil has to be ended, or there will never be any peace or harmony on this earth, and my race will not survive.
But again, what does that mean when you say a few men of honor are going to have to do something? Are those 14 words a call to revolution, essentially?
Absolutely. Your government has left no peaceful solution to the spiral of my race. You used the 101st Airborne to integrate my race in our schools. Racial integration is the euphemism for genocide. You use the police to beat the white mothers of South Boston into bloody submission when they resist genocide. Your police powers travel to a lonely mountain on top, somewhere far off in Idaho, to murder a woman and her son because they wish to live among their own kind and resist genocide. So what answer does an honorable man have?
When you talk about this, I can feel how deeply, I can sense how deeply you feel it just by looking at your eyes and how personal it is to you.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Can you give me a sense of David Lane, the man, and what brought you to this point in your life that, where a sense of you in terms of your upbringing, your background, that led you here?
I don't think it has a lot to do with that. Nature gives everybody, every race, an instinct to preserve their own. Maybe 10 years ago, I wrote a piece of poetry that's been used around the world called 88 Lines, 14 Words. And I think maybe a couple of stanzas would be appropriate if you're asking about my motivation. They go, are you a child with skin so fair, with eyes with blue or green, and ladies with tresses of auburn or gold will never again be seen? This is the dread that haunts my soul and demands my last breath that struggle I must to wake my kin from nearby slip of death. There is no higher instinct given males of any race than to preserve the beauty of their women and the existence of their kind.
But I guess what I'm asking you is, there are many people who would call themselves white, members of the white race, who would not advocate revolution or who do not believe that the white race is in danger of extinction. You obviously feel that they are very wrong. What is it that brought you to that conclusion, to feel this so passionately?
You almost have to get into all of my teachings, including religious teachings. Humanity as a whole spends their life justifying whatever usually false hypothesis that they are taught as youth, and erroneously believe that they are using rational thought. Your media, for example, uses the term minorities for the 90 or 98% of the world, while my race faces extinction. That's deceit. And the masses of people, their thought patterns are simply that your media, religion, and their upbringing teach them.
But even as a child, if I understand what I've read about you, and it is correct, even as a child during World War II, you thought, Hitler's got it right. You were sort of rooting for him as a little kid. So you hadn't done all these teaching, hadn't done all this kind of studying at that point, the kinds of things that come with age and wisdom and the amassing of knowledge. So there was something in you from a very early age that was saying, on some level, this is wrong. And that's what I'm trying to get at. That person...
I wish we could get into all some of my religious teachings and some of the teachings of the ancients and why certain people have a mission for a cause, whether it's Alexander or Galileo or whoever. There are certain people that do. And
are you one of those?
My cause is to stop the American murder of the white race.
But has it been your cause for as long as you can remember?
I don't think I was fully conscious of it. I, if you've read my work, you know, I felt for a long time that there was something terribly wrong in the environment of the country. And I spent a long time searching for who had the power. And you want to find out why things happen, you have to find out who has the power. And then I have to find motivations more than anything else to find why things happen. You have to see who benefits. Who benefits? And it took a long time. I went through, if you've read my works, you know, I consider conservatives and right-wingers and John Birchers and so on to be, to avoid the issue. I have very little use for it. So it was a long search.
But eventually you came down to the point where you determined that the ultimate enemy was legit.
I prefer the term Zionist. I am not at all certain that your run-of-the-mill Jew knows any more about what his leadership does than the run-of-the-mill Catholic knew of the Inquisition 4, 5, and 6 centuries ago. But what cannot be escaped is that the essential PowerPoints of media, finance, industry, religion, law, and politics in America and the once white nations are firmly in the hands of Zionist Jews. And they use that power to mix, overrun, and exterminate my race.
But why would they do that?
Well, probably have to ask them. I can look at the evidence, and it's undeniable. I can't read their minds or know their motives. However, people who are racially mixed. Henry Ford made the statement that there was only one defense against the Zionists, and that's to call your sons back to pride and race. If the people are racially mixed and have no sense of heritage or preservation of their own, they become malleable. Perhaps that's it. But you'll have to ask them. If evidence is clear, that's what they're doing. Motives? I can't read minds.
I want to go back to the 14 words that you said at the beginning. We must secure the existence of our people in the future for white children. Was that essentially what the order, the British Wagon, the group, if a term you want to use, what that group was all about?
Yeah, I'd like to make it plain that I'm not qualified, authorized, or even permitted to speak for the individual members of the group.
But is that what you understand?
But my understanding, you see, I only attended the first of these meetings. And in fact, I was a small player in the group. But more than anything else, the group was Bob Matthews. It was nothing but Bob Matthews' combination of nobility, courage, and charisma could have brought together such a diverse and strong-minded group of men. Many of them with, for instance, different religious views and a common cause.
Well, how was he?
I believe Bob Matthews was another one of those destined individuals, if you will. He had incredible charisma and courage, and he understood that when you have a volunteer army, you cannot give orders. But if your men have a certain amount of ability, you lead by leading. So Bob loaded up his version of a Viking longboat, the Chevrolet, and he said, I'm going to go raid the enemy. Are you with me? Or are you going to sit home?
And when he said that, essentially,
the choice was, if you have man of honor, you go with a brave man. And that's what the Breeders' Record did.
Do you remember the first meeting on that beach?
I don't remember the first meeting. He may have written me a few times. Clear back around 80, 81 or something. I'm just not sure.
And how would he have even known who you were to write you?
I think I had written articles for various publications, probably, would be my guess.
Articles about?
Politics, religion, something political.
But in when he might have written to you, what were you doing at that point? What was your involvement in the movement at that point?
I spent years, shall we say, penetrating the little groups in this mythical and non-existent movement.
Non-existent?
I believe if something has absolutely no validity, if it gets nowhere, if it constantly goes backwards and loses, I wouldn't even give it the name of movement. A movement has dynamic. I found nothing. In all the years and times that I looked, I found nothing.
Nothing with National Alliance, nothing with Aryan Nations, nothing with the other groups that were out there that would suggest they were part of a movement. You were with Aryan Nations, associated with Aryan Nations.
I have an association. I have association with all kinds of groups. I had to find out why nothing worked.
Why none of their efforts worked to you?
Yes. I mean, from the entire world, probably the best known group, Aryan Nations, once a year with luck can draw 300 people. There's 300 people without a local corner to watch some porno movie. That's no movement.
And that's what you were seeing back in the early 80s?
That's what I've been seeing in the so-called right wing for 30 years.
Why do you think that is? What conclusions did you draw?
Human nature, the media, money. A man, for example, I had a real estate license. They take my real estate license away because I won't work for the murder of my race by promoting immigration.
You wouldn't sell guns to blacks?
In white neighborhoods. That's genocide. Always remember, racial integration is genocide. Forced racial integration is deliberate, malicious genocide.
And by refusing to follow the...
You have to do it in every aspect of American life. A white man has to commit treason against the existence of his own kind to even hold a job.
Well, in committing that treason, as you put it, you lost your job.
Correct. That's the price you have to pay. Until white men reattach those parts that make them males and show a little courage, the race is doomed.
I think we have a big change. Is that right? No? Okay. I understand when you say for 30 years you have seen no direction to this movement, nothing that would suggest that it even is a movement in your estimation. But just if I can focus it in the period of this group coming together, give me a sense of you are then what you're reaching the age of 40, I guess, or just in your 40s.
Yes.
And you're looking around. You are involved in Aryan Nations, but you're looking around and you're not seeing anything being done.
Correct.
And you are convinced that the white race is essentially being eradicated in front of your very eyes and nobody's doing anything about it.
Correct.
Most specifically, no white people, the ones you would assume would do something about it.
Yes.
So you're a frustrated man, I would assume, in the early 80s.
Right. Loaded word, frustrated.
Well, you picked the word. It is, and I don't want to get into all the possible connotations, but... You pick the word. That's what it sounds like.
Let me think for a while on that one. As a man watches the death of his race, he's sad. I don't know if he's frustrated. I suppose that's a good metaphor.
Angry?
I find anger to be a non-productive emotion, I really do. I get, once in a while I get angry if I start talking about the federal government. But I'm very understanding of human nature. So I don't get angry. I'll tell you an incident. One day I was with Bob Matthews in a major city that'll have to go unnamed, and we saw a little white girl get off of a school bus with a couple of little black boys, and they're fooling around in some sexual horseplay or something. And Bob Matthews immediately, I'd like to shoot her right now.
Shoot the little girl?
Yes. Well, she's the one committing treason.
By doing what?
By betraying her race. That's Bob Matthews' way of it. I said, no, Bob, that's not right. From the time she was a tiny baby, her preacher, her teacher, her school, her religion, her newspapers, her television, every possible sensory stimulation said, the most noble, wonderful thing you can do is mix your race out of existence. And you're going to expect this little girl to make a moral judgment about whether that's proper. I'm not angry. I'm sad.
Well, if Bob would have shot him, what would you do?
Bob wouldn't have. That's just a gut reaction. The males of every race and species are given an instinct by nature to preserve their own kind. There is a natural antipathy put between every race and species in order to preserve the individuality and existence of each. And the males are supposed to defend the existence of their own kind. So there's anger. It's understandable. I look at it in a little bit bigger picture, and I don't see anger as productive.
Going back to that time when you said you were sad and and you saw no tangible evidence out there that anybody was doing anything.
Correct.
Is that when Bob Matthews came into your life?
No. I've always run my own. I've gone my own way through my own thing. When I found out what was going on, I set out on a program to distribute. Hopefully, I meant to distribute a million of a pamphlet that I had designed called The Death of the White Race to as close to every household of color as I possibly could. Bob just happened to pick my name when he decided to put his food together. So I was there, and I don't remember much about the meeting, what was said, but obviously, it must have been in accord with my 14 words, or I wouldn't have gone along with it.
Why do you think that Bob Matthews selected you as one of the initial members of this group he was gathering together?
Or the mind of Bob Matthews? I don't know. Bob was kind of a mystical man. He was deeply involved in history, heritage, culture. I keep thinking back. I don't think anybody else had any idea of exactly what he was starting or how he was going about things, but as I remember, it was September 22nd when he called the meeting, which is autumn.
You said that people didn't really know what Matthews had in mind when he called this gathering. You didn't know what was going on in his head, that he had plans?
Just speaking for myself, yeah. I don't think so. I don't think so. I think there was a common feeling that the government means to mix, overrun, and destroy our kind, and a common feeling that there was nothing productive being done in resistance. There was talk, as I remember, about Bob Matthews wanted to create, he called it a white basket.
Right, in the early 80s.
Yeah, he wanted to move people into an area around Medley Falls, Washington. But other than that, I just don't remember much about the meeting.
In fact, it's funny, because when talking to Richard Kemp, he told us that at one point there was a poster where he was asked to pose with Ken Loft's children, and that was going to be the poster for the American Bastion, because he was quite a handsome young man, and there was beautiful children as a way to get interest out there to this, to coming to Medellin Falls and creating this.
Well, propaganda is a legitimate part of any struggle.
Absolutely. We'd love to see the poster, but nobody can seem to find it. But he remembers that distinctly, that you know, that there was a real effort made, but as you said, you saw no action within the movement. Well, nobody was flocking to Medellin Falls either. And my understanding is Matthews was fairly disturbed that he didn't get much of a reaction.
It all boils down to money.
Yeah.
You know, if you make a public statement, if you're a white man, for the life of your race, you no longer have a job, your media comes down like hungry sharks in a feeding frenzy with all the buzzwords.
And you know buzzwords.
Oh, they're a Nazi, a hater, a bigot, and you say, I'm just resisting genocide. You're a Nazi, a hater, a bigot. It's like a broken record. And destroy it. So what's the man to do?
But aren't you also advocating the destruction of others? You say they destroy you.
Have you ever seen any of that in many of my writings? You have never seen any such thing.
Advocating the destruction of others?
Yeah, I don't think you have. I said that we must have our own nations for the preservation of our own kind.
I just read from some of your writings?
All right. Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe I'm reading into it, but... Wotan, and that's your name for the armed party, Willibarian Nation.
Correct.
Wotan is ruthless, mature, capable, self-motivated, silent, deadly, and able to blend into the masses.
Correct.
Wotan has a complete revolutionary attitude. He's loyal to those who share his cause. All others are expendable.
That's correct.
Doesn't that suggest that
all others... No, that doesn't mean you go out and attack them. The trigger, if you go on into that article, or into all of my writings, you'll find that the enemy, I repeatedly state, is those of our own race to commit treason.
But when you say expendable, what does that mean?
That means that in a war, there are usually innocent victims. Always have been. It's unfortunate, and we didn't ask for this war, but we're not going to accept the murder of our race because there are going to be innocent victims of the war.
But you're not even suggesting they're innocent victims. You're suggesting that people guilty of treason.
Well,
and then your treachery will be appropriately rewarded. That's not innocent victims.
You're not innocent if you commit treachery. You have to look at the whole, everything has to be put in context. Don't just take one sentence. Those who commit treachery. And then I go on to detail what some of that treachery is going on.
Well, and I'm just taking excerpts right now.
Right.
But what I'm saying is, when you talk about those who commit treason.
What's the penalty for treason?
Be aware.
What does your country do to somebody
that commits? Be appropriately rewarded.
What does your country do to somebody that it deems has committed treason? They're expendable, aren't they?
Well, I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying when you use the word expendable, to me that suggests that you are advocating the...
How can somebody of another race commit treason against my race? Just be logical. Only my race can commit treason against my race. And they deserve what they get.
Including
the penalty for treason. What's the penalty for treason in the laws of your country?
So you do, through your writings, advocate the killing of those who would commit treason?
With a proper trial, just like you do in your country.
What's the problem?
If there's evidence, if the evidence is clear, if the evidence is clear, you commit treason, there's a penalty.
And who decides on the evidence? Who's the juror?
In revolutionary times, you did not get the same kind of, look at revolutions. There's innocent people in revolutions, but once again, the choice is, do we sit back and let you exterminate our race, or do we fight? No choices. Left, no options.
So you don't advocate the removal then from the face of the earth of the enemy beyond those who would commit treason, i.e. white people. Then you're not advocating the removal of Jews or people of color.
What do you mean by removal?
Well, Matthew's referred to it as driving the enemy into the sea, killing, removing.
Whether you want to believe that there is a motive force called God that created the separate races on separate continents, or if you want to believe that they are the result of nature on separate continents, that's the plan. Imperialism is always wrong. Mixing is part of imperialism. Doesn't matter whether it was Alexander's empire, whether it was the Moorish Empire that attacked Europe, the Genghis Khan's empire. You blend different races, you have war because each is given a nature, ordained instinct for self-preservation.
And if more people die.
I'm afraid so. But whose fault is it? It's Genghis Khan's fault because he had to go from Mongolia to Europe. It's the Moors' fault because they had to go from Africa to Europe. It's Caesar's fault because he had to go all over the world. It's Xerxes' fault. But it's not the fault of the victim. I try to tell that constantly when I see the Muslim. When I see young white men and young black men at each other's throats. They send them to school together, and of course there's competition for girls. So they hate each other. That's not the fault of the black man, that's not the fault of the white boy, that's the fault of that filthy federal judge that tries to mix and destroy what God or nature created.
So what do you do with the filthy federal judge?
Oh, there. What I was talking about. A short trial and a shorter rope for the long drop. Correct. They destroy what God or nature created. And for that matter, if your cause is a political state like America, they destroy it. Cannot put the males, let's back off that. Your nation puts more people in prison than any country on earth. Your country puts more people in prison per capita than anybody on earth. Your country executes more people by far than any Western nation. And still the biggest growth industry in this country is prisons. It's doubling in less than 10 years. Are you going to lock up half the population or assassinate half the population to prove that you can mix and destroy what God or nature created?
By the same token, are you going to assassinate half the population to prove that you shouldn't?
You don't have to. You simply have to obey the laws of nature. You simply have to understand the instincts given every race and species to preserve their own kind. then all the conflict is over and there is harmony.
But if I understand correctly, and you need to tell me on this, the conflict will only be over if you stop the myth racing.
Correct. When every race, nation, and culture on this earth is permitted to pursue its own destiny and its own sacrosanct territorial imperative without interference from religious or political imperialism, there will be harmony.
So you're willing to live in peace, but you want to do it on your own little piece of land and have nobody else tell you what to do. You don't care about... If you had a little tract of land that was just white people, that would be okay, and everybody else...
Not a little tract. It takes, over a long period of time, every race must have its own contact. The inevitable result of propinquity or of integration, or whatever term you want to call it, is genocide to Mexico.
But what continent are you going to get?
Pardon?
What continent are you going to get? Because that implies that you have to throw people off it.
Migrations are part of history.
Forced migration.
For different reasons. But there are all kinds of migrations. Tribes and races.
What continent are you talking about?
To begin with, Europe has to be what it always was. Africa has to be what it always was. Asia has to be what it always was. This unspeakable monster you've created in America, I don't know what you do with it. I think the best could be done is what some people call balkanization.
What is that?
The country will have to be divided among different groups.
And you're comfortable with that?
I think that, it's the only choice. I mean, it's that or ongoing until you put half the people in the country in prison or until you're successful in murdering my race. You don't have a choice.
I want to go back to the barracks because we got off that, and I don't want to end this conversation. I want to pick it up again, this is obviously something that you care deeply about and continue to promote and believe in. But to go back to that meeting where we left off, you had said that you didn't know the specifics of what was going to happen. You had started to describe Matthews to me. Was he, when he talked about his race, was he a passionate man?
Oh, yes.
In what way? How did he...
I don't know, you could sense that if Bob Matthews said, he told me early on, I don't remember when, that he figured that he would be going to war with the Federals and he would probably last a year. And essentially was saying, I'm going to die in combat with these people, if you want to call Federalist people. But you could tell Bob Matthews. And what he said in the past.
You just knew when he said it. Wasn't
you knew when Bob Matthews said something, you stake your life on it.
Because there was a lot of rhetoric in the movement, again, of that time. In fact, another member of the group had said that people were starting to get impatient because everybody was talking, we have to do this, we have to do that, but nobody ever did anything. And there were some impatient young men out there, Matthews being one, who felt, let's just do it.
Yes, I think so. But Bob was he's the king. He's the only leader the Brooder ever had and ever will. Yes, I think so. But Bob was he's the king. He's the only leader the Brooder ever had and ever will. There's no words for Bob. He's just a special noble man.
And what do you think he was able to touch in this group of men? Because you really were very different people from different backgrounds.
Boy, I don't know how to put the exact words on what causes leadership ability. Do you? I don't know. He had it. I don't know how you define charisma. He had it. He's just a dynamic, noble, brave young man. Put it this way, if you had four daughters, you want all four of them married.
He was that great man.
I think he's the finest man that ever walked this country. I think no conscience.
Because
I love him like a brother. That's all I can say.
But what makes a man great?
A man that has principles, a man that will die for his principles, a man that will love his brothers. You know, in the kind of system we have today with its hierarchies, if a man is a general or a colonel or a higher up, when they come to the battleground and it's bedtime, the colonel sleeps in the tent on the cot and the soldiers sleep on the ground or whatever. If you were traveling in an action somewhere and you took a motel room and packed a bunch of guys in, Bob would say, "You guys take the bed, I'll sleep on the floor." It's a whole personality thing. It's just, he's just a noble, brave, wonderful man.
Yeah, another member of the group said he's the kind of guy who gave you the shirt on his back.
Yeah, that's... yeah.
Which, I suppose some would say doesn't play with what happened afterwards, and others would say what happened afterwards is proof, you know, depending on where you come from.
Yes, the rabbit thinks the coyote's a bad guy for wanting to eat him, and the coyote thinks the rabbit's a bad guy for wanting him to run away. Everybody has their own perspective, though.
How much of an influence do you think Gordon Call was on what eventually transpired in Medellin Falls?
I have a hunch that Gordon Call had an impact, particularly on those who followed the Christian identity theology. But I admire Gordon Call. I have strong disagreements about the way some of these people in the movement has gone about things, but the purity of their motives and that some of them stand for their beliefs, you have to admire that.
Well, why do you think that what happened to him motivated people to do more or set the tone for what happened?
The propaganda of the deed is always 1,000 times more effective than just chatter. Mm-hmm. People are motivated by act. They're not motivated by words.
So when Gordon Call was killed, that gave people a reason to want to do more than talk about revolution?
One of the founding fathers says that freedom has to be periodically, the grounds of freedom have to be periodically watered with the blood of martyrs or some such statement. I don't remember exactly. That's bad.
And that's what Paul was, a martyr.
Yeah, I think so. His sons, or his son, and Yori and Scott Powell did actually nothing but be targets for the federal assassins, and they threw him in prison the rest of their life. They did the same thing, you know, with Randy Weaver. The family were nothing but targets for federal assassins, and afterwards, they tried to put Randy in prison for the rest of his life. Along with Jerry Spence managed, I guess, to stop that. Mm-hmm.
Well, it was after Call's death that the rally was held at Aryan Nations, or in Spokane, sponsored by Aryan Nations, and that's where Matthews, apparently, I don't know if you remember this.
No, I didn't know.
He stood up to the crowd. There was some anti-rally.
Oh, yeah, I've seen the picture.
Yeah.
Where
Right, basically said, let these people talk, I can't hear you. And several people who were with him that day said they saw Rita being born at that moment, that he impacted on those around him who didn't know who the heck Bob Matthews was, but he did something very simple, he stood up.
Very good.
That's what they said.
Very good.
Took a stand.
Maybe you just get on your own question, answer your own question. He did something. That was Bob. He just looked at a situation, said, if nobody's doing something, then I'll do it.
And that was what you wanted to hear?
Not me particularly. I never felt that. It wasn't until after the whole events were over and we'd gone to trial and all of these things that I began to realize just what a magnificent man the feds had killed on the island.
You didn't realize that before? You didn't realize exactly what he had been involved in before?
It was a growing process, I guess. Bobby grew on you.
He grew on
you. He just grew on you. I had spent a long time, but you run out of superlatives. He's just a wonderful man, that's all.
Can you take me back to September 22nd? You said it was the, autumn.
I think it was the autumn equinox. And I think it was the 22nd of September. I just don't remember much about it. Contemplating it afterwards, and knowing that Bob was into kind of a mystical sort of heritage and whatnot, I'm sure that's why the date was picked, and he gave some kind of a little talk, if I remember right.
What did you do? On my understanding, you all came and had sort of a potluck dinner with Wad's family, and then the men retired to the barracks, or what was known as the barracks?
I think that's what happened, yeah. I wish I could help you, but I just... That's 12 years ago, and it didn't, at the time, it made no real impression on me. I didn't really become impressed with the rest of the, what's been called the Brugger's Viking until the trial. And I heard the allegations of the Federals, and I saw 10 men standing strong in the face of 1,000 years in prison, and in the face of the murder of their leader. And I became very impressed with a bunch of great men.
Do you remember, though, at the time, do you remember the chairs in the circle? Do you remember? I'm just trying to get a sense of...
There were chairs in the circle, and some pledge, and some talk by Matthews, if I remember that. And then there was a baby put in the circle, and they pledged to fight for a future for the white baby, or for white children.
Was the baby doing anything? It was a little girl.
I'm glad you told me. I don't remember. It just wasn't... Only in retrospect. Looking back, is it any benefit?
But I would think, given the sense of zeal and mission that you all had, that it would resonate very strongly.
It wasn't there at that time. This was all apparently something that came later. At least, I didn't do it. This was a bunch of guys that got together and talked about, we got to know some people in Marvin, up in that area, and try to preserve our town. There was no hint of what would come.
There was no suggestion that you might be involved in illegal activities, no talk of robbery or...
Oh, none whatsoever. In fact, there was some talk about getting a contract to clear forest trails or something, if I remember right. That's the only conversation I got. Don't get me wrong, it's not that I have any... I wish we could have come up with some way to raise an army and march on D.C. or something. I have no objection to that. I don't believe there was any conversation like that at that time.
Do you remember any conversation about an assassination at least?
None whatsoever at that time.
no discussion about counterfeiting. I've read accounts where you actually brought up the whole idea of why don't we try counterfeiting?
I don't think there was any discussion at that first meeting. I don't remember it.
Yeah.
I would swear to it, but I don't remember anything but just a bunch of guys saying, you know, we got to move some people up in this white bastion.
Was it at all an emotional meeting with them?
No. I didn't notice it that time. I wished I could make something like that for you because you know...
No, it's interesting because others have said, and people can have different takes on the same event. One man described it as highly emotional. That doesn't mean that that's his perception.
Yeah.
But you seem to describe it as sort of void of emotion. It really wasn't.
Well, I consider the young men who were the action men of the Brooders Fighting to be the finest, most noble men on the continent. But they didn't begin to grow on me until later when I actually saw what they were doing. So, maybe I was jaded or something.
Who were they in terms of the ones that were in that initial group? Who did you think were the fine soldiers that you were looking
at? Well, I can't co-sign allegations made by the Federals. There were some young men that Bob Matthews brought. If some of them have admitted to you that they were there, they were fine. Like I said, I've been 190 years for talking.
Well, Richard Campbell
didn't think he was there. If he did, then you know.
I don't know your perception of him. I know that he said he was there. Would he be one of those fine young soldiers you're talking about?
Well, when I see the evidence that he said he was there, I'll tell you. I'll tell you this. Richard Kemp is one of the finest young men I've ever met.
You have an impression of Denver for me? I'm talking back then.
Not drunk.
Even at that time?
Absolutely.
How about Ken Moore?
Did I see Ken Moore was there?
Gee, I don't know. I don't think so.
I guess
that's your impression.
I guess we can talk about Ken Moore. He's one of the traitors, huh?
Tables.
Oh, you got a great tape?
Yeah.
Ken Moore. I kind of liked Ken Moore. I could see he had some character defects and weaknesses, but I kind of liked Ken Moore. I think I still do, even though he's one of the three that brought to perjured testimony that put me away forever. I'm not a convicted person. You know, when the Federals come to some of these guys and said, we're going to put you in prison forever, we're going to put your wife in prison, we're going to take your kids away and give them to who knows who, unless you talk, each man made a decision what would be my comrades or my family. And Ken made his decision.
Well, you know what he said to us. He made the decision to basically lead them to you.
Well, he's the one that attracted them.
Because he thought that at least that would save your life, that he was afraid that you would die. He actually described you as a nice man.
No justification there, but...
Well, this is it now. He's allowed his...
Yeah.
You're,
I understand.
You got to allow everybody their own point of view here. His point of view was that you were going to die if you didn't do it, and he stands by everything he said. He has never suggested that he was coerced into the statements. That's his view, that he told the truth about you. And when you testified about your involvement, it was the truth.
There is absolute proof that he and another guy testified, he that I was on the West Coast, and another that I was on the East Coast, the same weekend, driving the same yellow Volkswagen. When it's my word against his, all these federal perjurers, that's one thing. When the evidence is absolute, they're lying. I'm not going to get into some debate.
Yeah, and I do want to go through some of the evidence in a little bit, but I just bring that up because he did talk to us about it, and you say you still think you kind of like him.
I think he was weak. I think the federals went to him and said, you see, I don't mind him rolling over and testifying. What makes me mad about these guys is when the feds make up stories and they testify not about what happened, but any story the feds make up. That makes me very unhappy. But I still, Locke made his decision. He wanted his family. And he's certainly not an evil man like the feds that destroy my race.
Does he deserve to have his head cut off, which was the penalty that the group had determined would be handed out to those who...
If that's what the group determined, I didn't have any decision.
Part of the group.
If I had no decision making. If I had something to say about it now, if I had my own country right now, if I was president of this country, which would be the first good president you ever have, let's start a David Lane for president of the United States.
Who's going to vote for you?
With your media help, about 65% of the population.
You think so?
Oh, absolutely. Once in America, if I ever break your media barrier, they would all go home. If I had 1 hour on your national TV to teach my philosophy...
Wait, you don't? I'm sorry. Sorry. Recreation warriors,
all Charlie inmates report to the indoor recreation area. All Charlie inmates report to recreation area.
I'm sorry, you were saying if I had
1 hour on your national TV with props without interruptions, I'd turn the world upside down.
That's all it would take is 1 hour?
That's all it would take to get the ball rolling, so to speak. Because the average person in this country has never been exposed to any truths in their entire life.
But your literature and the literature of like-minded people is out there. Some might argue that the average person has been exposed and has discounted it.
No,
if it's the truth, why has...
Just a minute. You'll find no relationship between my literature and what you call the right-wing or conservatives. I consider the likes of Rush Limbaugh to be the worst enemy my race could ever face. You find, and even in the white mythical movement, I don't think you find much relationship between what I teach, what they teach.
But the ultimate goal is the same. Even that white, as you call it, mythical movement, and the
maybe it is. I can't read the minds of these people. I don't know why. If you could have been privy to what I've been through for 20 years, 30 years total in the so-called right wing, and seen the absolute insane idiocy of these people, you'd have to know. Maybe the movement, so-called, was run by the enemy. I don't know. They had fantasies. You ever heard of a guy named Jim Whitcomb? He made up fantasies about how 200 million Mongolian horsemen were riding their steeds across the Alaskan tundra to attack America. Another one, a retired colonel, had some fantasy about millions of Mexican communists hiding in tunnels waiting to attack them. It's kind of insane, son. But don't accuse me of having anything to do with the right wing or even the white wing. It was time for something new happened.
But then that would suggest that the movement is pretty powerless in your estimation.
Or you said it for me, thank you. There is no movement. That's the reason that I
with the help of Katja, try to run things in a manner which historically has proven has a critical chance of success.
What are you doing that's different?
I can tell you little bits of it. First of all, anybody that understands the motivation, how you motivate people, know that you get on a single issue and you beat it to death. First of all, anybody that understands the motivation, how you motivate people, know that you get on a single issue and you beat it to death. They know that issues have to be emotional. They know, I don't want to get into all the things that I do, but...
But is the issue that you're beating to death and the white race is doomed unless people do something about it?
Absolutely. 14 words.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the people call me Mr. 14 words. Mm-hmm. There is no other issue. And I'm going to beat that to the day I die. Or I have victory.
And why don't you think that the white race is beating about to
Oh, but it's coming to believe you me. The entire bunch of these, whatever they are coming my way. They will.
What do you mean the entire bunch of whatever they are?
The ones that see 200 million Mongolian horsemen riding. They're going to finally figure out that whoever it is that's been running things is either insane or an idiot.
I do want to know what an America with you as president would be like, but I want to, I keep getting off topic, my fault, because you bring up so many interesting tangents here to what we were involved in. Just to go back and finish up that meeting, September 22nd, and I understand that your memory is not the best on that, and what you do remember is that it was not a particularly emotional meeting, as some felt it was. Could I have you... This was the oath that was taken, at least that's my understanding, and others in the group said this was it. Can you just take a look at it and tell me if that's what you remember? If you can read it out loud, that's great. Are you comfortable with that? Do you still subscribe to it?
I don't remember it, but sure sounds pretty good.
Are you at all comfortable reading it out loud?
Well, I don't know about driving the enemies into the sea yet, so I would drive them out of our land if there are those wanting to destroy my race.
We hereby invoke the Blood Covenant, declare that we are in a full state of war.
And will not lay down our weapons until we have driven the enemy into the sea. I would have to specify who the enemy was.
Well, the enemy, according to those who were part of the group that we have spoken with, the enemy to Bob Matthews was ultimately the Jew and those who would betray their race.
For me, the enemy is those who destroy my race.
And that would include?
Anybody that works to destroy my race. Anybody that destroys the territorial imperative necessary to survive my race.
Would that include an entire other race of people?
I don't understand your question.
Would that include an entire other race? Would that include...
It doesn't.
For example,
I don't consider other races to be my enemy.
So you didn't agree with Matthews on that?
I didn't say that. Other races aren't the ones responsible for the murder of my race. So to commit treason.
But Matthews spoke specifically about the Jew and repeatedly about the Jew, then you did not agree with that.
Well, the only difference I would say is I say Zionist Jew. What you're trying to do is take...
I'm trying to understand it, because everybody has a different take on it. I'm not trying to do anything with it. I'm trying to understand it. One person said to me, if they were a Jew, you'd kill them. There was no, you're saying to me something different than that. So that's all I'm trying to understand. People may come at it with different perspectives.
I don't know how anybody can know the progress of revolution. All I know is we have to have sacrosanct territories for the preservation of our people. How it happens, I don't care.
But you set certain goals, David, in a revolution. You just don't go out with a gun and barnstorm your way through a building and survive it. I mean, you have targets. That's how you win. There's a strategy.
I saw no strategy laid out at that first meeting. There was simply a commitment that we had to have a place which survived with our race.
Sure.
Sorry.
It's reflecting back.
Yes.
Sorry.
I would prefer to only read the words that I have.
I understand that. No, and I understand that. I didn't know if that had brought it back to you. And you felt passionate
about it. It sounds kind of familiar.
End of move.
But I only take responsibility for what I write.
Okay. When you look at these words now, and you said, well, they sound good, what do they mean when you look at those words?
It means that there are still a few white men that care about the highest law of nature, the preservation of their own kind.
Did you mean leave that barracks at night believing you were embarking on something important?
No, I didn't realize it was going to be something. Well, some of them might. You say you meant. Well, I got to make it clear. I can't speak for anybody.
Fair enough. You're right. And you've made it perfectly clear. Did you leave that meeting believing that you were about to embark on a great mission?
Such a concept never even occurred to me. I had attended, I said penetrated a dozen or more organizations. And here's some more rhetoric. I didn't know it was going to be more than rhetoric. I did not yet know that Bob Matthews was the kind of man he was, or that his followers would be the kind of men that they would be. But that's all in the future somewhere.
So at that meeting, you didn't even have that feeling yet about Bob?
No, he was a nice young man.
When did you realize that it was more than rhetoric?
I realized it was more than rhetoric for Bob when he finally convinced himself to break the first of the old government's so-called laws. He went to He removed some of the folks' funds from the usurer's vaults in the Seattle Canal. How's that?
Well, actually, first he robbed a corn shop at one of the buildings.
Oh, I think I did hear that at the trial, but I had no knowledge of that. He told me personally about taking that bank. Yeah.
What did he say to you about it? You were smiling.
When you first... No Bürgersteiger ever committed a crime. In the eyes of nature, in the eyes of nature's God, or in rational judgment of morality.
Wait, David. Walking into a bank with a gun and saying, stick them up, give me your money, whatever the words were, that's not, in your estimation, a crime?
When your race is over the abyss, extinction, then anybody that supports the system which destroys your race.
But then that's everybody, essentially.
You notice that the Reuters were not alleged or charged. You're leading me down the garden path.
Well, I am not. I wouldn't even know how to find it in this place. I don't think there is a garden path.
Oh, boy.
You're going there by yourself, sir.
I don't believe that there was any allegations that the group removed any money from private parties, lest they paid the Federal Reserve money.
So as long as it was an institution of the government, quote unquote, that is not a...
Particularly an institution that carries on usury. Usury, that is the charging of interest, is simply a high crime. It is theft by deception and destroy, and it destroys the moral fabric of a nation. And theft under color of law is the worst of all.
Did you think what Bob Matthews had done by going into that bank removing it of some of its funds, you used a much better language than I'm using right now. You call it one. You think, good for you, Bob. Okay, was that a great bit of news when you heard it?
Any act that contravenes your race murdering government, Chip pulls my answer.
So you enjoyed the fact that Matthews said Bob the back was underway.
I don't think that's a sufficient word.
Not strong enough for how you felt.
Okay.
So pick another word. You're never using the right words.
That's a good enough word. Go
ahead. But at that point, you realize, at least for Bob Matthews, it was not rhetoric.
Correct.
In the barracks.
Correct.
Did it make you want more than ever join forces with him? Was it a sense that, hey, we...
No, I've always felt of myself as a philosopher. The glory, the honor of the looters goes to the young men of action. Philosophers are a diamond dozen. Men of action are what makes things happen in this world.
So what was your role then?
I really didn't have much to... You know, to my shame, I really didn't have much.
Well, tell me what you did.
Role.
As limited as it was, what were you doing?
What does that federal prosecutor you want me to talk for? We won't discuss that.
Did you ever recommend to Matthews that the group get involved in counterfeiting?
I did not.
I'm sorry, I want to allow you the opportunity to ask the question. Did you ever discuss with Bob Matthews the idea of counterfeiting?
Let's set a basis if you're going to start talking about allegations of the government. All right. I have given you and your producer absolute, undeniable proof that this government engaged in a criminal conspiracy to destroy me, that they jeopardized me three times in two districts, an absolute, undeniable mockery of the Fifth and Sixth Amendments to the United States Constitution. You can write to the Seattle District Court and get a copy of a pertinent indictment jeopardizing me for a crime that happened in Denver, Colorado, in violation of the Sixth Amendment. That was the first indictment. You can write to Seattle to get a copy of the indictment jeopardizing me for conspiracy to commit an offense in Denver. That's a direct violation of the Fifth Amendment. You can then write to the Denver District Court and get a copy of the indictment jeopardizing me for the same offense a third time in a complete mockery of the Constitution.
And the fact that the court listened to this argument on appeal and threw it out means nothing to you?
What does it mean to you? When they write right in the document. What does the English language mean? They write right in the document denying appeal. We tried him in Seattle for this offense. We tried him in Denver for this offense. We've decided that's not double jeopardy. That just goes to show what kind of obscenity the justice system of your government is. And if you do not realize that when operating under color of law, its criminals masquerading as prosecutors and judges will make a blatant mockery of the fundamental law of the land, do not realize that they will also make up charges, create perjured testimony in order to get rid of a political opponent. First of all, I think you need psychiatric counseling. But second of all, you have no concern.
No, I do, but not that.
What was his name?
A whole other ugly story to get into. I understand your argument. I understand what you're saying.
It's not an argument, ma'am. It is absolute fact. It is undeniable. I'm sorry.
It is your reality.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's
absolutely
right. Was the group involved in counterfeiting to further the mission?
Let me put it this way. I will not discuss allegations of these federal criminals. But if the group was engaged in revolutionary activities, shall we say,
so if you had been involved in counterfeiting, that would be okay with you. But you're not going to tell me whether you were involved in counterfeiting.
That's a good way to put it, yes.
In fact, would you be proud to have been involved in counterfeiting?
Well, I would have done. If I had been running the show and it happened, it would have been done much more. Let's forget that.
No, what was that?
Yes, I would be proud.
What was that? It would have been done much more fun. Was that pretty sloppily?
Well,
a
man named Murphy was the problem. But
even before Murphy, it was a problem with bills that were not made very well.
Yeah, I don't want to get into that. I'm just see you're starting to repeat allegations of federals and want me to talk about that or something.
But you know what? They're not just allegations of fellows. They're also what order members or members of the group have said to me.
If an order member says he was involved himself to you in a revolutionary activity, then fine. But don't ask me to say he was. I'm not.
No, I'm asking you if you were, since you have been connected to it, and others in the group have said, sure,
I don't admit to anything. I don't admit to any allegations of your federal government, and I will tell you that some allegations of your federal government are technical.
If you believe, and I sense that you do believe very strongly in the mission and in doing what it takes.
What it takes for the survival of my race in the face of a government whose singular intent is to exterminate my race.
Then why not admit to anything you did that furthered that cause? What do you care if it's illegal or not, because you don't honor the laws of the land anyhow. You don't believe in them.
Not only am I not going to open myself for further prosecution, I am not going to open the doors to the federals possibly prosecuting or murdering any more of my friends or associates or family.
Well, how many more years could you catch? You're not going to have. Would it be? Based on the number of
years. It isn't me. I don't care if they give me 10,000 years for executing tomorrow. I'll call your government the most filthy institution in the history of the planet. But there are other people involved.
And your concern is that in some way you could implicate others, or they might be taken care of by the government?
After you sat through a federal trial, you pretty soon realize that if you say anything, it ends up crucifying somebody. You simply have no conception of what this government is. And you should have. You remember for 51 days how your media, I don't know if it was ABC, but national media, told the American people how David Koresh made the statement that he was God. I know that thousands of tapes have been sent to the national media showing how that came about. Somebody accused him of getting his wife pregnant. It turned out the lady was 74 years old. And David Koresh said, as a joke, well, I guess if he could knock up a 74-year-old lady, he was God. They looked at cut and tape, he was God. And your media played it for 51 days to demonize David Koresh before the man slaughtered it. Your media does not focus on the FBI using loudspeakers in comments like, how's your breakfast, Mrs. Weaver? Are you having a nice day, Mrs. Weaver?
I don't want to
broadcasting them.
Sure.